Welcome. I'm so happy you're here with me today because I have another fabulous guest, the wonderful Melanie Hirschhorn. She is the founder of VIP Digital Content. She knows how to use email marketing and social media to grow your audience. So if you're a writer or a blogger, you definitely want to check out this episode because she's going to talk about how to use email marketing, how to use Facebook, how to use Pinterest, which I never knew how to use, and she's how to use as a blogger. I actually didn't even really know how to use it, period. But anyways, so Pinterest, Facebook, she has some insights on Twitter, and she's also going to tell us how to use Instagram. So I'm excited. Before we get to Melanie, let's catch up on some news here at Zazo.com. Today I'm going to be posting a video of my October giveaway care package contents. So look out for that. It will be posted on Twitter and Instagram. Actually, I guess by the time you see this, it will have already been posted, but that's okay because you have a week to sign up for the raffle, and then I will be drawing the winner on next Saturday. So, writer care package giveaway. Look out for that. Also, my 7-day affirmation challenge is coming up November 8th through the 15th. This is an opportunity to transform your thinking into a more confident, courageous mindset. So look out for more information to come on that. Again, that will be November 8th through the 15th. Now let's learn a little bit about our guest today, Melanie Hirschhorn. Melanie Hirschhorn has extensive knowledge about the process of starting a business from scratch, curating the best digital marketing content for your niche, and creating effective writing to attract your ideal customer. Her award-winning maternity designs have been sold on Nordstrom.com and at other retailers nationwide. She's worked as a print, radio, and TV journalist, and as a PR specialist in Hollywood. She has won numerous journalism awards and received her master's degree in broadcast journalism from the University of Southern California. Melanie lives in Phoenix, Arizona with her husband, daughter, and son, and her Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, Marty McDog. Hi, Melanie. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to talk to you. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
So first tell us, how did you get into marketing?
Well, so I think I've really been doing marketing my whole life without realizing it. When I graduated from college, I grew up in Canada. And when I graduated from college, I ran away to LA because I was the only one in my family who was born in the US. So technically, I guess I was a birthright citizen. Not that anybody wanted to move here. It was just me. So I packed up two bags, had a boyfriend in LA, which was convenient at the time, and I went to work in publicity. So I was working with celebrities and walking red carpets. And I was even on a reality show for Kathy Griffin's My Life on the D-List. That was
it was so funny.
And it, so doing all that stuff, I really understood like what marketing was and I really loved it. But when I was doing the PR part, I wasn't writing enough. Like I wasn't being able to be creative enough. And marketing is really about creativity. So, I mean, there are a lot of numbers, lots of numbers too, but it's a lot about creativity. And so I decided to go to journalism school. I went and got a master's in journalism, in broadcast journalism from the University of Southern California. So then after that, I was like, okay, so now I've been on both sides. And I worked in radio and I worked at a newspaper. And then I was like, I had a when my daughter was about 8 months old, we moved to Arizona. And I was like, well, do I try to get a job in news and they'll probably pay me less than the childcare is going to cost? Or do I follow my random weird nagging dream to create breastfeeding clothing?
Oh.
So I did that. And so that's, wow. So I became an entrepreneur right away. And I learned how to do everything. I mean, I used to say that I was the janitor and the president. I did everything. And so, you know, cause when you start a clothing line, it's not just finding t-shirts to print something on. I mean, I was designing the clothes and I had to find manufacturers and I had to market them. So I was doing all the things. I did all the things. And, I was even selling my clothes on Nordstrom.com for about 3 years until finally I saw that the writing was on the wall and the people who were getting pregnant at the time. So I guess it was millennials, that generation, they were kind of not into what I was selling and they would rather go to a fast fashion place and buy something big and just wear that. And I was like, okay, well, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not going to evolve with that. I'm going to shut this down and I'm going to do the only thing that I really love about this company left, which is the marketing. As I had been going through all the steps of being an entrepreneur and learning how to do the manufacturing and the inventory and all that stuff, I had also been honing my skills on marketing. So I had been learning how to do the blogging and the email marketing and the social media management. I had been doing all that for myself. But here's the thing. My final year in business, I hired somebody to do my social media for me because I thought I could learn a lot from her and she was, you know, she promised the world. And not only did she not deliver, but there was some emotional abuse going on. And every time I tried to post something, I would be told that it was boring and dumb. And I started to feel like I was boring and dumb.
Right.
Yeah. And it was it went on for a long time. And I would say, you know, gosh, I have a master's degree. Why do I feel like anything I post on Instagram is going to be an instant flop? And so when I was finally able to break free of that relationship, I had taken everything I could possibly learn from that person. And I decided to turn it around and help others so that no other women entrepreneurs would be in the position that I was in, which was one of feeling inferior and incapable of doing any of my own marketing, which is just not true.
Right. Because you had been doing all of your marketing up until that point, right? So did you just need the extra help because you needed space to do other things? Is that why you hired her?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And because I wasn't comfortable with the whole with Instagram yet. I didn't understand the nuances. And I got to tell you, I mean, I at first when I finally, I have a new Instagram account, obviously, because it's a different company. And I love Instagram. I used to have like heart palpitations if I had to post on my former Instagram account because I thought, okay, no matter what I post, it's going to be awful. And then when I started relaxing and I started growing my following organically just by doing it myself, I was like, oh, this is fun. This could be fun. This doesn't have to be so stressful. Right. I can enjoy this. And so I really try, you know, I know that I'm not the only one who has ever experienced something like that. So,
right. I mean, self-doubt is just, I think that's what holds a lot of us back.
Mm-hmm. Self-doubt. Absolutely.
Or the imposter syndrome, like, who am I to be doing this?
Right. So the way I work is I help people with their marketing and I'm also their biggest cheerleader.
That's an amazing story. I love how you just were like, I think I'll start my own breastfeeding clothing line. And you made it happen.
I made it happen.
So right. But it's so interesting, Melanie, is that I love how you're telling us that you still had self-doubt because you have a master's degree, right? What was your master's in again?
Broadcast journalism.
Okay. So yeah, you have this background in writing and writing persuasively to some extent, right? Yes. And you still had the self-doubt. And that's just, it's amazing how we can have so much experience and we have so much knowledge and we could still, you know, get caught up in all of the craziness in our head.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, so when I started this business, VIP Digital Content, I started going to summits and events. And I remember sitting and listening to this very famous woman. She's like a financial guru. Her name's Sharon Lecter. She's one of those people who she co-wrote the Rich Dad, Poor Dad series. Like that's,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So she's big time. And I remember she was saying, like, you are an expert. And, right. and, you know, when she was saying, she was talking to an audience, but I felt like she was talking to me. And I started to think, yes, I am an expert. Because, you know, when you're supposed to, what technically is an expert, somebody that does something for 10,000 hours, right? So right. you do something for 10,000 hours. So I calculated, and sure enough, I had been doing my marketing for 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, that's what I needed as the base for me to jump over that imposter syndrome problem.
That's wonderful. Wow. So tell us then, because I know you believe that email marketing is more important now than ever.
Mm-hmm. I do. Absolutely. I do.
So why is that?
All right. So let's take it from the beginning. When you have a product or service and you want to tell somebody about it right now, if you post it on Instagram, they may see it in a few days. They may not see it ever. You can put it in your stories, but if they're not checking your stories, they're not going to see it. But you know that when you send an email, it arrived in that person's inbox. And if it didn't, your email platform will tell you why it wasn't there.
Right. Right.
If something happens and Facebook shuts you down tomorrow, how are you going to reach all the people in your Facebook group right. if you don't have their email address? Mm-hmm. That is why. And, you know, I hear a lot of pushback and it's, oh, email marketing's dead. Well, no, it's not. Okay. Next. The other pushback, it's not. if it was, you know, Amy Porterfield and Jenna Kutcher and all these people would not be sending email out all the time if it was dead. Right. You know, they'd be like, I'm not sending it. There's no point. So, but it's the other pushback is I don't like getting email. So I don't want to send it. That's another pushback. I'm like, okay, but you still open it.
Right. Yeah.
And what count the reason, you know, I'm just redoing my website right now. And I'm just writing the copy for the page about email marketing. So I love that you asked me that because it's like fresh in my mind. I was doing it an hour ago. And you know, when we have a phenomenal subject line that creates curiosity, and you write it so that the person who gets it feels like it's for them, they're going to open it.
Mm.
They're going to open
it. How do you do that, Melanie? Because I think that's where a lot of people know to some extent that I should have a headline that pops, that makes people want to open my email. They don't quite know how to construct such a headline, though.
Essentially, you want to make it so that it is creating curiosity, mm-hmm. providing value. You can throw their name in there using the F name thing once in a while. Often it's good to be direct and to say, invite inside in parentheses, come join me. Mm-hmm. So, but if we want to avoid clickbait, like, I almost died, ... of laughter. No.
That's so funny. Yeah, we get that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like the boy that cried wolf. And it's like, oh, someone else died. I don't want to open this. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. You're so pissed off after you open it and find out it's something like laughter. What?
Right, right. So, but one that I've used is I was so embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell a really embarrassing story.
Yeah.
Because I'm an open book. Right. And if all my readers want to read about how I embarrass myself and if it can help them not do that, then I'm happy to do that.
Well, I'll that's tell embarrassing honest
stories.
Yeah. That's honest vulnerability versus just sensationalism.
Right. And you know, let's talk about the gap for a second. I love this example because I don't remember even signing up for the Gap's emails, but I get them every single day.
Okay.
And I just, for some reason, I don't unsubscribe. I don't know why, but I don't. And I look at what their headlines are, their subject lines are every single day. And the latest is Gap Cash. You have cash to the gap. And you know, that's a good way to get somebody to, I have money to your store. Okay. But again, you know, they've been sending it every day for like a week. And I'm like, no, I don't, because I don't shop there. But so you want to be, I like how you said vulnerable. Yes. You want to be emotive. You want to be expressive, and you want to create curiosity, because if you could do a how-to. Mm-hmm. How to live your best life, because anybody who wants to live their best life is going to open that email. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps you give some sort of, wellness hack, like how to lose 5 pounds by next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I would click that.
Right.
Because I want to lose 5 pounds by next Tuesday. That'd be great.
Right. Yeah. I know it's the how to's are quite popular. I think people are really catching on to that. There's one I remember from the book. It's like, if you give me 10 seconds of your time, I can, you know, and I think that's creating some value. Like, I'll give you a free tips on whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Or a gift for you inside. People will open that if you're giving away something of value. And I think that that's really the most important part of an email newsletter. Not an email sales campaign, not that, but a newsletter that we also call a nurture campaign. You are sending this to provide value. You are sending this to get people to know, like, and trust you. That fun little phrase that gets thrown around. Mm-hmm. Because this is how they're going to know who you are and what your brand is and what you represent. Mm. And you're going to stay top of mind, because so often, an entrepreneur will have a freebie. They'll have an opt-in. People will sign it up for it. They'll send the opt-in, and then you never hear from them again. And then they're like, well, I got 500 people on my email list, but I haven't sent an email since last Christmas.
Right.
And I'm afraid. Yeah. So we can, you know, what I will always say to somebody in that position is, okay, we're going to start sending another email this week. And then you're going to start doing it consistently.
Right.
You have to be consistent, even if it's just 3 lines. I sent an email last week. I was like one of those weeks where I was running around like a crazy person, like a chicken without a head, as my mother would say. And I didn't have time to sit down and write a really juicy newsletter. So I sent an email that said, hi, tell me what your biggest marketing challenges are right now, and hit reply. And I got replies.
Huh.
It's just something to reach out and to ask a question, because that's market research right there.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, this week I was able to be a little bit more on top of things, and I sent, you know, an interesting thing about stuff. So, but it just depends on, but you always want to be consistent.
So Melanie, how often should we be emailing people via our email nurturing campaigns? Because one of the things that I always get nervous about is I send mine out once a week.
Good.
Unless I'm having an event and I'm launching up to the event, I'll send it more frequently. But when I was considering in the beginning, how often should I email? I just didn't want to irritate people. As you said earlier, I didn't want to get on people's nerves. So what is the ideal number of times per week you should be emailing, or does it depend on your blog or business or whatever?
I stick with the golden rule of once a week.
Okay.
I mean, but I have clients where I do one email is just about events that they're going to be in, and then a second email providing value, like a basically like a newsletter.
Okay.
So that they are, you know, their readers are reading some interesting information, and we're leading them somewhere else. But I would say once a week, and you don't have to worry about annoying people. Once a week doesn't annoy people. Every day annoys people. But I still haven't unsubscribed from the Gap. So there you go. Right. I mean, I know I'm not alone when I say that I have a separate email address just for stores. And
well, I have one just for newsletters.
Right. I wake up and I have over 100 emails every morning.
That's a lot.
And I work late at night, and I know that at 11 o'clock, I'm going to get one from Joanne Fabric.
Right.
Around 11:30, I'm going to get one from Michaels. And at about, usually about just a little after midnight, I get one from Zillow.
You know, this is interesting, because when I said I would only get very few in the beginning, when that happened, I would think, why aren't these people emailing me? Like, it just seemed like if I signed up for your newsletter, shouldn't you be communicating with me? And so
exactly.
Yeah.
It's really about consistency. And that's across the board in digital marketing. When you do something, you have to keep it going regularly. And yes, mm-hmm. things will come up. You know, maybe we'll have like a pandemic or something. And things will change.
Maybe.
I don't know. I just came up with that crazy idea. But you have to keep it going. Mm-hmm. You have to keep it going as best you can.
Right.
I mean, obviously it's not brain surgery, so it's not life or death, but it is the long game. It is absolutely the long game, and you got to keep it going, because that is how you build up your brand consistency. That's how you build up your message. That's how you attract more people, because they see, okay, I can depend on you. I can depend on you to regularly give me the value that you promised to give me when I so gracefully and graciously gave you my email address, which is worth something these days.
Yeah. And people are very protective of their email.
As they
really
should
protective.
Be.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
they should be. And that's why whenever we can actually talk etiquette for a second, if you'd like.
Yeah, sure.
Email address etiquette.
Yeah.
Don't put somebody on your email list if they didn't say they want to be there.
Yes. I mean, that's when you sign up for one of these email campaign platforms like MailChimp or whatever, they'll tell you, do not add anyone to this list without their permission. Mm-hmm. Or if I do get someone's permission and I add them myself, there's this little box I have to check. Did this person give you permission? Because that's a serious offense.
Yeah. It's offensive. I mean, I don't know the legality of it. I'm not a lawyer, but absolutely. I know that I have been put on email lists, and I'm like, how did I get here? I know I didn't sign up for anything. Mm-hmm. And then of course there's the ones that you end up on and you want to unsubscribe, but you know the person, so you feel bad because you know they're going to see you unsubscribe. So then you just keep getting their crappy emails feeling.
Yeah.
That's why
it's
send good emails.
Separate account. It's good to have a separate account. Right.
Yeah. It's also good to send good emails. That way, you know, when you send value and not annoyance, it'll be fine.
Okay. So let's talk about the value, because I think what maybe prevents people or stops people from sending out not a lot, but consistent emails is because you have to be consistently offering valuable stuff, right? Like if this is for your blog, you have to be consistently updating your blog and having things to promote or having. And so that takes a lot of time and effort, right? I mean, you have to be consistent with the blog to be consistent with the marketing.
Absolutely. But here's what I'll tell you about the blog. The blog is the foundation of all your digital marketing. So you write one blog and you take that blog and you put it everywhere in different ways. And you're not reinventing the wheel, you're repurposing. So
can we talk a little bit about that? Because
just gonna drink this coffee. Okay.
So how do I use Pinterest?
Oh my God, this is my favorite subject. Okay, you got me so excited. I just did a 9-day workshop on, I just taught a 9-day workshop on Pinterest. So
what, 9 days?
Yes. I'm every couple of months I do a 9-day workshop. So, in my Facebook group. So Pinterest is a hidden gem that's not so hidden. It is not the most popular social media platform, but guess what? It's not even a social media platform. It's a search engine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. See? Change your mindset. It's a search engine. People go to Pinterest to find things to buy. That is why you should be there. Yes.
I thought it was just to post pictures of stuff.
No, people don't post pictures of Pinterest. They post on Pinterest just of stuff. They post things so that other people can find them and either buy them or do them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I love this. Ooh, I love that. Yeah. Do that again. Woo.
Yeah.
So what's phenomenal about Pinterest is that you post pins that lead back to your own blog on your website.
Okay.
And always while you're there, I'm sorry, while the person is on your website, that's why every blog needs a call to action of some sort. And preferably it should have a freebie that people can sign up for. Mm-hmm. That way you get the email address of the person that came from Pinterest.
Right. Okay. So if I'm a blogger and, I guess I'll just use myself as an example. So if I write a post about personal essays, how to construct a personal essay, write a personal essay.
Perfect.
And how do I use Pinterest as a search engine to bring people to that post?
Okay, good question. Let's start. So the first thing you want to do is you want to go into the search bar of Pinterest and type in personal essay and see what people are searching for around personal essay. Could be how to write personal essays for dogs, personal essays for prisoners, whatever they're searching. Right. And so then when you create your pin cover, which I recommend to do in Canva because it's free and easy and fun.
I love Canva. I love Canva too. I just discovered it recently. I love it.
Oh, really? Okay. So I've been using Canva for a long time. Like since before, like the beginning of my nursing wear days, I've been using Canva. Like I can scroll down in Canva really far and there are pictures there that I will never post. But this was, yes. So I've been using Canva a long time and Canva just gets better and better and better. Like literally better and better. It's incredible, that site.
It is. It's so, I love it.
So they have a super easy template to use to create a pin. So you're not even inventing how to make a pin. You just press create pin and it's like, sure, what would you like to do? Let us help you. And so do that. Save the name of it as the search term. Whatever the search term is that you've discovered is the main one that this is about. So personal essay, assuming that that's what people are searching for. I don't know that that's something people look for. Right. But maybe they do. So let's say, so personal essay, we're going to call it personalessay.jpg. And we're going to upload that pin and we're going to create an actual pin. So we'll upload the cover and then it's the title, the description, and the destination link. Mm. In your title, it should have the keyword. In your description, it should have the keyword. And your destination link should send them back to where this blog is. So the blog link on your site.
Okay.
And that is essentially how it works. So you got the search term in the name of the pin, like literally the pin file cover name. You've got the search term in the title. You've got the search term and other search terms in the description. So that's three ways for people searching on Pinterest who are searching for personal essay to come across your pin.
That's pretty powerful.
It's really powerful.
Right.
Wow, that stuff's really powerful. It's, yeah. And what's crazy is that I think it's like 97% of people go to Pinterest like looking to find something that they're looking for with the intent to buy.
I just never even, you know, I always thought it was like for vision boards and, well, I guess that is stuff that you would buy. Yeah.
It is for vision boards and, you know, it's for crafting and do it yourself, this and that and the other thing and recipes, but it's like you go to the recipe, you're on the person's website and they're going to have a freebie there for you. If you like this recipe, why don't you download my ebook on how to make mashed potatoes using cauliflower or whatever. Right. And that's how you grow that. It's a wonderful way to grow your subscriber list. And the best part is that it's free.
Okay. The unlike Facebook is
Facebook is technically it's free. Okay. Technically, but your business page, for example, it's pay to play. So, you know, it used to be that you could just post on your business page and people would see it. I remember those days. It was a long time ago in a galaxy far away when you would post something and then like 30 people would like it because they saw it.
I haven't been on Facebook since 2012. So I have not been on there, and I'm questioning whether or not I should. And if I should, what do I do?
So Facebook groups are where you'd want to be on Facebook. Look, I now have 1,100 people in my Facebook group. I've grown it over the past two months, actually. I started with 100 and I'm at 1,100 now over 2 months because I'm teaching digital marketing all the time.
Right. So you're giving something of great value for sure.
I just give and give because I literally get tears in my eyes when I see the transformation that people get from learning what I have to help with. You could create a Facebook group for all these people and invite in people who need that mindset shift that yes, you can write. Of course you can write. You're literate. And if you're not literate, it's time you learn how to write.
Right.
I
love how you asked me the age group. I don't think a lot of people think about that. And I was just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I was starting to sweat.
Sorry.
No. That's really good.
Well, that's the marketing hat that I wear. See my invisible marketing hat? Yeah. So that's, you have to define your ideal client before you can market to them.
Right.
So you want, and I mean, just on the periphery, you want to know, are they a man or a woman? Are they, how old are they? Are they married? Do they have children? And where do they live? Where do they shop? Do they listen to podcasts or are they only watching local TV news? I mean, these are things you want to know because then you'll know how to speak to them.
Right, yeah.
And once you figure out who that person is, I highly recommend doing something that we all know as market research. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not exciting. It's not pretty, but
I think it's pretty exciting.
Okay. Well, yes. Cause you're a writer. Of course you do. So me too. I don't like focus groups. I think they're boring, but I, you know, when I started out and I was really trying to hone in on who my ideal client was, I decided that my ideal client was, female business coaches. Okay. And that is still who my ideal client is. And I started reaching out to people I didn't know on LinkedIn, on Facebook, through friends. And I did about 10 interviews.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the people I interviewed had very little in common. So, but one thing stuck out. None of them had woken up or had grown up and said, when I grow up, I want to be a business coach. Not one of them had that. They all said, I was doing something else. And then I realized that I did this and I can help others. So that was the sort of the common theme. Some liked Chanel, some liked Target brand, but all had that in common. So you want to know who you are speaking to so that you can speak their language. You've probably heard this term pain points. Now you've told me all yours, not your client's pain points. You've told me them. It's the imposter syndrome. They don't know how to write. They know they need to, but they just can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, and is that the language that they use when they're explaining their problem? Or are they using other language? So a really great example is if you are a fitness coach and you say, I am going to teach you how to tone your abs in 20 days, whatever. Mm-hmm. But all your clients are like, I just want to lose the flab. And you keep talking about toning, but they're talking about flab. Then you're not talking to them in their language.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I get that. Yeah. Actually, after my event, I sent a survey And one of the questions was, what topics would you like to see covered in future events? Which is why I'm talking to you, because a lot of them had marketing marked off.
Perfect.
So yeah, okay, I'm doing something good. Okay.
You are. And you know, one thing I love to do is talk, so this works out perfectly.
Now, okay, so I think it's interesting, and I'm still like harping on when you asked me about the age, because that brought up a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. If my clientele is in that age group, then yeah, maybe Facebook isn't the best place. Maybe it's Instagram. Mm-hmm. I don't even have an Instagram account.
Okay.
How would that work for someone like me who calls herself a writing coach to help these women reach their writing potential?
Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to change your mindset, and you're not going to say, I call myself a writing coach. You're going to say, I am a writing coach. So that's number
right.
one.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. My pleasure. So then what you'll do is you'll create yourself an Instagram profile that says, I help. And then you'll define your demographic, you know, women. Fine, because these are the women that are on there. The 60-year-olds are there, but they're not that. They're few and far between. It's like 23% of all users are between 50 and 64. So that's not.
Wow.
So you will be there. You will write your bio, attracting them. You will have a link that either goes to a freebie of some sort, or to one of those landing pages that Linktree allows you to have. And then you're going to post pictures, lifestyle pictures of what you do. So it could be, you know, you can use stock photos. They work. You can use pictures of people writing. You can use pictures of people together in a group collaborating. But remember that photos of people attract your attention much more so than photos of things.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And you're a writer, so writing shouldn't be an issue. The captions, right. I mean. And when you want to do your hashtag research, because every caption needs hashtags, you want to figure out what other people in your niche are using for hashtags. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then use those too. And
so the caption, go on.
No, go, you're going to say.
So the pictures, if I'm posting, you know, pictures of the writing lifestyle, I mean, ideally would be my pictures of me, ideally, right?
Yes. Ideally, yes.
So, and the captions, the purpose is to just give people a visual of who you are, or so they can learn to trust you or feel like they know you, or what is the purpose of that?
Yes. And yes. And yes. And yes. Okay. It's really to provide a snapshot of your brand in a beautiful way that entices people to want to know more about you.
Okay.
Think of it as like a glossy magazine online.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
The thing is that not a lot of people are going to see it because of the beautiful algorithm that is. What happens is, I think it's like 2% of all your followers will see your pictures unless they specifically go onto your profile to look. That's why you want to be hanging out in your Insta stories. You want to be making Insta stories. You want to always have Insta stories going. Those are the ones that disappear after 24 hours.
That's like video footage?
It can be video. It can be pictures, and you add cute little, is it GIFs or GIFs? I never know. I always say GIF. Yeah. I say GIF, but then it's like, I forget some, I think it was my daughter. She's 8. She was like, it's GIF, mom. I'm like, I don't think so.
I
taught you to talk. Anyway, right. So that thing, the GIF thing, they have adorable ones of those. And you, I mean, there's a whole system. You want to have a hashtag. You can also put where you are, a location tag. And you want to have those all the time in your, and I would show you my, you know, an example right now, except that my son has my phone because he likes to look at Legos in Amazon. So I don't have a phone right now.
That's completely understandable. I'm not even mad at your son. That's understandable.
Yeah. No, I know. So but what I do want to touch on is that I first of all apologize for the gardening outside my window.
Okay. And yeah. I know what that's like. So yeah.
Yeah. There's always noise. Doesn't matter. Then the real thing I wanted to talk about is, ironically, Reels, Instagram Reels. It is the newest feature on Instagram. It is basically Instagram's answer to TikTok.
Oh. Which,
so TikTok is pretty cool, and that's where younger people are hanging out, and older people too, but mostly younger people. I mean, that's where they're getting their information, you know, they're getting their news even from TikTok. So with Instagram Reels, what happens is you are doing these 15-second videos, and you can create them within Instagram, or you can make them in TikTok and save them and put them in Instagram, because some people still don't have all the features, myself included. Like, I can't add music. It still won't let me add music. So I actually just played music and danced for a reel. So it was in the video. Instead of adding it on top, I added it within the video. Anyway, there were lots of workarounds. But the point is that you can make these fun little videos, and you can go on YouTube and learn how to do them. There are 500 million tutorials already on how to use Reels. But the point of this whole spiel that got interrupted by a gardener is that because it's new, Instagram is giving priority to Reels. So if you're creating them, more people are going to see them right now.
Okay.
So when Instagram drops something new, when you get on that bandwagon on the sooner side, you have more likelihood of being seen quicker.
Okay. You know, you brought up something interesting about the algorithms. And can we talk about how that works with Twitter? Because I've been looking through the tweets, frustrated people asking, why isn't anyone responding to my tweets? Are you not seeing? There was this one woman who was like, why isn't anyone responding to my poetry? And she had this poll. And one of the choices was, I don't like your poetry. The next one was, I don't see your poetry. And then one of them, I can't remember the other. But most of them were marking, I don't see it. So is it true that if I have 1,000 followers, or am I getting all of their stuff in my feed? Am I seeing it all? Or is there some algorithm that's...
You know, I don't want to purport to be a Twitter expert, but what I know of Twitter is that because it's going so quickly,
yeah,
I don't know enough about the algorithm to give you a great answer on that. But there are specific things that you can do to get more people to see your tweets. And that is, you know, instead of just posting her poetry, she could find something trending and then reply to the trend and include her poetry.
Okay.
So let's say it was like National Poetry Day and that was trending. Then she could use that hashtag and she'd get more people to see it.
Okay.
She could, let's say the late great Maya Angelou had tweeted something at that point in time. Right. And she replied to Maya Angelou with her poem. That right. would get, that would have gotten a lot more eyes on it.
Okay.
So, yeah. I don't know a lot of poets, but I knew that beautiful poet. So that's why I used her as an example.
That's the only poet you need to know, Melanie. That's
oh, good. Poet. Okay. She's the only poet whose stuff ever really spoke to me. So
yeah. It's interesting how you brought up hashtags, because I've heard all kinds of like yays and nays about it on Twitter. Don't use it. Do use it. They're messy. But do you believe it's a good idea? Because it does draw more eyes.
It does. It does draw. And she would also have, in this reply to the late great Maya Angelou, she would have done at Maya Angelou. So it's very possible that many of her followers would have seen it. So it's really about replying. I mean, yes, you're going to have your own comments too, but if you really want to get more eyes, then you want to do it that way.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I know we kind of got off the email marketing, but I kind of want to bring it back home for a minute.
Perfect, sure.
So growing your email list, That's a challenge.
No, it doesn't have to be. So when you're first starting out and you have a big goose egg in your, you know, your MailChimp account, it's like you have this many followers and you're like, no. Send out an email to your friends and say, hi, I'm starting this business. Are you guys interested in joining my email list? And if you happen to know somebody who might be interested, will you send them this email?
Why am I so nervous to do that? I don't know why
because,
I'm so nervous.
Because, you know, even coaches need mindset stuff. Yes.
This is true.
They do. Look, I'm a digital marketing coach. I know that I know what I'm doing now, but at the beginning I still had doubts, but now I don't. Just like everybody has some sort of doubts and we got to just push through. Mm-hmm. Push through them. So, what's the worst that can happen if you send out this email to your friends? They don't open it, right? Mm-hmm. What, are they going to not be your friend because you sent them an email? No, of course not. Or they're like, oh, she sent me an email. Great. Great. Ebony just sent me an email. Awesome. But that's it, right? So nothing bad's going to happen. So send that and see where you get. Maybe I'll get 10 people to sign up. And then you went from 0 to 10. You want to take this list and you want to nurture it. So you can send them an email and you can say, I'm doing a giveaway. I'm doing a giveaway on Instagram. So head over to my Instagram and join me there. Because you want to be cross promoting whenever you can. For example, this past week, I sent out an email to my subscribers. Hey, I'm going live tomorrow on Facebook in our group. And I'm going to be talking about Instagram. So go ahead and join me at this time in this place, because then people are seeing you in different places where they hang out. Cause maybe they don't check their email so often, but they're always hanging out on Facebook or what have you.
Right.
So you can also, so I was talking about giveaways. Giveaways are really great. If you want to grow.
I just had a giveaway, Melanie.
Okay.
My second
Good.
One. Yeah.
Awesome. What was the, what was it on Instagram? Was it on, what kind of giveaway was it?
It was on Twitter. It was a writer care package. So it's just a whole bunch of like $80 worth of stuff for writers.
Awesome. So they had to follow you on Twitter then?
No, they didn't have to follow me on Twitter. That I had the ad on Twitter or the video posted on Twitter, and then they would just click it to get to the landing page for the raffle, and they had to enter their email.
So you have their email addresses and those are now in your subscribers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Excellent. So you've done, okay. So that's another way to grow is giveaways.
Right.
So that's a great way. The thing that I absolutely love for growing my email list is creating lead magnets, also known as opt-ins, also known as freebies, also known as PDFs. I wish they had one name. Because it would make things a lot more clear.
Right.
But that's what they are. I create them regularly. I have 5 or 6 available at a given time. And they're very effective because they teach people something. They show people that I'm offering them something, that I'm offering value, and that I know what I'm talking about. And that if they like me, they should join me in my Facebook group where I hang out and do more stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. But it takes some time for me. I found in some research to find the opt-in that really works.
Yes, but no. So I've done trainings about this too. So you're just getting it all thrown on top of you. I apologize. I like
I
to
love
just
it. I love it.
Barf out all this information, yeah. Just right on, right here.
Give
so
it all.
Give, yes. Yeah. So when you are thinking of what to create, what's the low hanging fruit? What do people ask you all the time? The same question. What are people asking you?
How do I figure out what to write about? Where to get ideas from?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we just came up with 4 opt-ins.
Oh,
yeah. So you could have 20 places to get ideas to write about. You could have another one. How to motivate yourself to write every single day for a week or for a month, or how to get yourself ready. I mean, is the end goal a book, or is the end goal poetry, or what's the end goal of the writing?
It depends on what they're working on. I'm currently working with someone. She wants to complete a memoir. She's going between, should it be a memoir or should it be a fiction book, but she wants some type of book. We don't know what genre yet, but she definitely has a story.
5 tips to get out of your own way and start writing.
Okay.
These are things. I get it.
Right.
These are things. And you have the answers. You have the answers. That's the thing. That this is what I tell my clients. This is what I tell the people in my program. You already have the answers in you. We just have to ask you the right questions. And then as soon as I ask you these questions, you're like, oh, well, I know the answer to that, obviously.
Right.
Yeah. But not everybody does. You know, people who don't write for a living like you and I do, they don't know how to write. You know, for them, they sit in front of a blank Word document and they have heart palpitations.
Right.
For us, we sit there and we see the opportunity of what we can create.
Right.
So you have to just put yourself in their shoes and go back to the very beginning. So I have a number of opt-ins. I have how to write a killer subject line. We covered that, right? Mm-hmm. I have how to attract your ideal client. We talked about that. I have 5 tips for really great email marketing. Mm-hmm. I have a content calendar for people who want to plan their content for the next, you know, up until the end of this year. So those are things that people need. And those are things that teach people something. And mm-hmm. I just want to, there's one other nugget of this is that in your opt-in, you should give them a quick win. So when they're done, they should have one thing that they didn't have before.
Mm.
And
when they're done signing,
reading it, when they're done reading it, when they're done reading it. Yeah. Or doing the exercise that you've provided, when they're done, they should have a new thing. Maybe whatever that small one thing is that you show them, that shows them that they want to know more about you and they want to work with you, or at least find out more about what you offer, mm-hmm. because you just gave them something for free that really helped. I mean, I told you about that 9-day workshop. It's a 5-day workshop with like extra bonus days and stuff. But so in that 5-day workshop, it was completely free. And I had people sending me messages on Facebook saying, I've learned more from this free workshop than I have from the last few courses I paid for.
Wow.
So when you come at it with serving, we come with a service attitude, we're giving. First of all, it's so unbelievably rewarding. It is so unbelievably rewarding to give people things that you know that they need that they don't even realize they need for themselves.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I am so not a crier, but for some reason, when I talk about this stuff, I get like, but also then you're showing them like, oh, here, join my community. So you always want to have your call to action in your opt-in and wherever your community is. So if you're most active on Twitter, then say, click here to follow me on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
If you're most active in let's say you have a Facebook group, join my Facebook group. Cause you already have their email address. That's how they got the opt-in. So you don't have to re-ask them for the email address. You already have it, but you want to lead them to somewhere where you are active so they can see what else you have to offer. Because if you're posting awesome stuff on Twitter, they're going to want to know because they like you. They're like, oh, well, Ebony taught me this already. I wonder what she's doing on Twitter now.
Tell us where we can find you, Melody.
Sure. Okay. Well, I would love to give your people a freebie if that is okay. So if they would like the how to write a killer subject line, then you can go to vipdigital.live /subject lines.
Okay. And what about social media? Where can we find you on social media?
Okay. So my Facebook group is called VIP Digital Marketing Tips, and you can find it at VIP digital.live/community.
Okay.
And you can join me there. And I go live twice a week and I give so much content and it's just like, I'm there to serve.
Oh, I love that. You're so wonderful, Melanie. Gosh. Oh,
thank you. Okay.
I love talking to Melanie, and you know that interview went on longer than I could fit into this episode. So if you want the bonus content, it's about 10 extra minutes where Melanie and I talk about being of service as a blogger and monetizing your blog, then check it out. It's going to be posted on my IGTV on Instagram, and you can follow me at Motivation to Write. That's one word for the 10 extra minutes I could not fit into this episode, but they are the 10 minutes are worth watching. And you should also know that Melanie now has her own podcast, and it is called VIP. I'm looking at it now. VIP Access, marketing tips and strategies from powerful women in business. And you can get that on Apple Podcasts. Again, it's called VIP Access. VIP Access. So please check all of her stuff out, her Facebook, her Instagram, her podcasts. Because she's great at what she does. Tune in next week. We have another wonderful marketer. Her name is Vicky Wu, and she's going to be talking to us about how we can figure out who our audience is, how old they are, what they like, what they need. She's also going to be talking to us about using our authenticity and our creativity in our marketing strategy. So tune in next week for Vicky Wu. Until then, thank you so much for tuning in today, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.